come so often, those somber men from the sheriff. Always they were polite, and always they seemed embarrassed. But they asked so insistently of the general's whereabouts, and they talked of court papers with strange Latin names. Sometimes they lingered about as if they believed Henry Lee were in hiding, and more than once they had tried to force their way into the house. That was why Ann Carter Lee's husband had placed those chains there on the doors in the great hall at Stratford. The horses had been taken. The furniture had been attached, whatever that meant, and tract after tract had been sold off to cancel obligations. Faithful friends still visited, of course, and whenever the general rode to Montrose or to Fredericksburg, the old soldiers saluted him and told their young children that he was Light Horse Harry Lee. But she knew that people whispered that he had twice been in jail because he could not pay his debts. Now, of course, he wanted to pay, but how could he? She could not help him, because her father had put her inheritance in trust. Robert Morris, poor man, had died without returning a penny of the $40,000 he owed Mr. Lee. And that fine plan for building a town at the Great Falls of the Potomac had never been carried out, because they could not settle the quitrents. If General Lee had been able to do that, or to get the money on that claim he had bought in England, all would be well. As it was, they could not go on there at Stratford, where the house was falling to pieces and everything was in confusion. Besides, Stratford was not theirs. Matilda Lee had owned it, and she had left it to young Henry, and he was now of age. So the only thing to do was to leave and go to Alexandria, where they could live in a simple home and send Charles Carter to the free school and find a doctor for the baby that was to come in February. That was why they had Smith and 3-year-old Robert in the carriage with their few belongings and were driving away from the ancestral home of the Lees. Perhaps it was well. Lee returned home from the court-martial in New York and put all his energy behind the autumn work at Arlington in the belief that he could soon complete the last of the necessary repairs and rejoin his regiment. He was busy at this on the morning of October 17, 1859, when Lieutenant Jeb Stuart arrived with a sealed note from Colonel Drinkard, chief clerk of the War Department. The message was a brief order for Lee to report to the Secretary of War immediately. Setting out at once in civilian clothes, Lee soon learned that the government had received from John W. Garrett, president of the Baltimore and Ohio Railroad, news of a mysterious insurrection at Harper's Ferry, Virginia. Trains had been stopped. Firing had been heard. Rumor had it that strangers had entered the town in large numbers and were inciting the slaves to a rising. What that might imply, nobody had to tell Lee, for he had been at Fort Monroe when the Nat Turner insurrection had occurred, that bloody massacre which the South for almost 20 years had been fearing the Negroes would repeat. The place of the insurrection seemed chosen with a design that made it potentially the more serious, for in Harper's Ferry, at the junction of the Shenandoah and the Potomac Rivers, the United States maintained an armory and arsenal where rifles were made and stored. It might be a serious affair, calling for instant action. Troops had been ordered from Fort Monroe during the morning. The service of Maryland militiamen had been accepted. A detachment of Marines from the Washington Navy Yard had been ordered to the scene. Lee was to take command of all the forces, acting with his brevet rank of colonel. Orders were quickly issued, and Lee went with the secretary to the White House, accompanied by Lieutenant Stuart, who had been at the War Department negotiating for the use of his patent on a sword attachment when he had been requested to carry the message to Arlington. Sensing trouble, Stuart had immediately asked the privilege of going with Lee. Not knowing the magnitude of the rising, the president and his military adviser prepared for the worst, and drew up a proclamation which Lee was authorized to issue if conditions justified. Armed with this document and without waiting to put on a uniform, Lee hurried with Stuart by train to the Relay House, 8 miles from Baltimore, whither the Marines had gone from Washington at 3:30 p.m. to take the train for Harper's Ferry.